The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Elissa Walker-Campbell, I want to welcome you inside the Quicken Loans studios at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, where weekends always start early on Friday nights from 8 to 10 Eastern Time, and twice is always nice. Did you know we've got encore presentations now on Saturday and Sunday? We want to encourage you also to go to our yahoosportsradio.com/podcast, where you can check out our show and all of our other great shows right here at our premier network. Well, the 2015, the NBA playoffs, the Western and Eastern Conference Finals are well underway, and we are very anxious to break it all down. It's wonderful to have back with us columnist with NBC New York. You can also listen to him on NBA Sirius Radio. He's a great analyst. My true pleasure leading off tonight's show. Going to bring some sunshine down here. It's so rainy in Houston. My man, Mitch Lawrence. Good evening, Mitch.
How you doing?
I am absolutely looking forward to your perspective, as I said in the open, on the finals. But what are your thoughts on, you were there Tuesday night for the draft lottery. Lady Luck shined bright on the Minnesota Timberwolves. They've got this talented young core, but the burning question is, should the Timberwolves, should they draft Karl-Anthony Towns or Jahlil Okafor?
Well, that's something that I'm sure Flip Saunders, it's a little bit of a problem. It's a great problem to have, right, if you're Flip Saunders and you finally get a number one pick. I mean, you got to remember, Alyssa, this is the first time since 2004 that the team with the worst record actually won the lottery. So that's nice to see. And, of course, back then it was Orlando getting Dwight Howard, another great big man, as it turned out. Now you have to wonder what they're going to do. A lot of people think it's Okafor. Some people think it's Karl-Anthony Towns. I had a chance at the lottery to talk to Larry Bird, who was there representing, of course, the Indiana Pacers. Yeah. And although he wouldn't tell me exactly flat out who he would draft with that team if he were in charge of Minnesota, he had a lot of great stuff to say about Okafor. He thinks he can come in the league right away and score down low. He can be a physical presence, and I just got the impression from Larry, at least, and I take, you know, what he says with, I put a lot of stock in that because it's Larry Bird talking. Here's a guy who's probably more ready-made right now than Towns. Towns might maybe have some more upside. We'll see. But like I said at the start, if you're Flip Saunders, you're rebuilding that team, you've got Andrew Wiggins, a rookie of the year, you can't go wrong getting one of those two guys, because then you're going to have an inside-outside combination maybe for years to come.
What is your belief? Who has the higher ceiling between the two, between Towns and Okafor?
You know what? I really don't know. It is such a great question. I looked at Okafor. Now, you're talking about ceiling, so you're talking about potential and projection. It's really hard. Mm-hmm. What I just went on from this year was I was a little bit more impressed with Towns. I didn't like Okafor on the defensive end. He didn't show me much presence at all in terms of being a big-time defender. I thought a lot of times it just, like, it wasn't didn't even matter that he was there. I didn't see a lot of shot blocking. I didn't see a lot of great defense. Towns, to me, is a better all-around player. You know, if you want to not nitpick, because how many big guys in the league, you've seen it, Alyssa, can't shoot free throws. It's like Okafor can't,
right,
but Towns can. So you factor that in. I don't know. You know, I'm going to bail on you on this question. I don't know who I would take. I'll tell you what, it would be a really hard, if I were a GM and stuff, I know that now I've got, what, next few weeks here. That's plenty of time, so I don't have to make any split decisions, you know, quick decisions. I might be leaning more towards Towns over Okafor for the long run.
We are so glad you're with us on this Friday night at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm Elissa Walker-Campbell, posting up and going one-on-one with Mitch Lawrence. We know him well, NBA columnist. You can check him out at NBC New York and NBA Sirius Radio. So let's do a recap for the listeners. I mean, no doubt, obviously, this is a big win for Minnesota. They get the golden ticket. But last season, here they finished with a league-worst 16-66 record. How big, Mitch, how big of an impact can a fresh young talent make in terms of, like, total wins? I mean, we're talking like a 10 to 15 win boost. What can they do?
Well, you know, it'd be hard to see anything more than that. I think both guys are, you know, you're talking about whether it's Okafor or Karl-Anthony Towns, you're talking about guys who are, what, freshmen coming in the league. Neither guy is Shaquille O'Neal. Neither guy is even LeBron James, who came in after, obviously, high school, gave Cleveland that huge boost initially. I'd probably tend to say more of the 10 to 15 range. Plus, they're both playing in the Western Conference. Now, that's, you know, something that people have to step back and look at, you know, what's wrong with the East and the West, and why is the West so more dominant? It's going to be more dominant when they keep getting these players, but you got to remember, now these players have to go play in the Western Conference. And they're both joining teams that were not successful last year, obviously, and now you're asking them to go, you know, the majority of the competition you're going to see is in the Western Conference. So I think if you told them right now, these teams, they'd be getting 10 to 15 win progression, that would be great. I mean, I don't think we're going to see anybody come in like Tim Duncan and you're going to win another, you know, 25, 30 games off the bat. It's going to take some time for both guys, I think. And the big thing is that you can grow with them. You don't have to do anything overnight, and you can see how it plays out. But it's always a positive sign to get two big-time guys like this. And we got to see how they develop themselves in terms of individuals, because like I said, you play 1 year of college, that's not a big sample size to go on.
Right, absolutely. Cautiously optimistic. So do you anticipate that Minnesota could be the Pelicans of this season in terms of improvement?
No, because I don't see either guy being Anthony Davis.
Okay.
You know, Anthony Davis came in from Kentucky, and, you know, you heard back then this could be a big-time player, and I think it was probably rated more highly than these two guys. And what he's done there and how he's matured and how he's grown and how he's made the Pelicans into a playoff team. And, you know, he finished, what, fifth in the MVP voting. Not for next year, they're not going to be Anthony Davis. They might not be Anthony Davis, as it turns out, in the long term either. I'd say chances are they won't be, because now people are talking about Anthony Davis like, you know, he's going to be, if he stays, you know, stays away from injuries, a big thing there. But if he stays away from injuries, Lizzo, you're talking about this guy might be an all-time player. That's what, not just me. I'm talking about guys like Lionel Hollins, people who've been playing in the league, been around the league a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I think it's a little much to say that Okafor and Karl-Anthony Towns can take this team and make it into a Pelican situation a la Anthony Davis. That's a little too much to ask.
Well, Timberwolves fans, though, they got to be very excited. They got to love this roster. I mean, you're talking about some of the fresh young talent when you look at that and the opportunity to develop it. I mean, and Andrew Wiggins, Zach LaVine, how do you not get jacked up about that guy? I mean, he's incredible. I mean, I could see some real improvement. And the thing that you have to love too, Mitch, is the influence of Kevin Garnett that he's going to be able to have to mentor these guys, to mold and teach these guys. I mean, that's going to pay very big dividends.
Absolutely. You raise a great point. Of course, Garnett's out there. He's going to tutor. The great thing is that for Flip Saunders, who loves Kevin Garnett, we all know that it's probably his favorite player of all time. Kevin's going to be the guy who's going to teach either Okafor or Towns the ropes here and be a positive influence. He's already been a great influence on that young locker room. You need people like Kevin Garnett. He's a former MVP. He's a champion. He went to two finals with Boston. No, his best playing days, we know, are long over. I saw him in Brooklyn last year. But the influence that he can have on teaching guys the ropes and teaching players how what they need to be professional, to be successful, the discipline, what you have to demand of yourself, the responsibility that being a professional, he's going to teach that all to either guy. And you know what? Both guys are real high character, quality guys, so it's not going to be a hard deal. It's not going to be a battle there. I think that he'll have a positive influence, and I think this is exactly why Flip Saunders brought him in. I know Glenn Taylor the other night was talking about how, you know, Kevin's already back hard at work, and if he's back hard at work, that shows us he wants to play. He probably wants to play another 2 years. I wouldn't be surprised. The big thing, though, is the influence he'll have on one of these young men. And it's going to be great for them. That's a real bonus for Minnesota.
Well, the NBA Rookie of the Year, what was your assessment of the year that Andrew Wiggins had and just the growth, the development that we saw from him?
I think that he was well-deserving of the award. I know some people thought Nerlens Noel came on. Look, I thought that this was a great, great step for Minnesota. I think he's going to be a big-time player. How big-time, we'll see. If you're Cleveland, you're almost like, you know, you don't know what's going to happen to Kevin Love, but my gosh, if Kevin Love walks on you and you don't have anything to show for it and you've given up Andrew Wiggins, that could come back to bite you down the road. Let's not forget. I mean, they gave up a lot, Cleveland, to get Kevin Love. So, no, Wiggins had as good a year, I think, as people thought. And like I said, he was richly deserving of the Rookie of the Year award. And there's nothing but a bright future for him. And to get that big man, that's going to even improve his game more, because if these guy, one of these guys pan out, then you'll have a real, you know, a big-time duo for the future. And that's just going to make Wiggins better also.
Hey, here in just a moment, we're going to transition. I want to hit on the Lakers, but give some love to Nikola Pekovic. I mean, 6'11", 295. I know he was sidelined with 19 games this year, and what he had some surgery in the month of April. What is this guy still capable of doing? He's just got to stay injury-free.
Well, you know, it's funny. When I've spent a lot of time around the Minnesota people at the lottery, and there's a big concern about Pekovic and his ability to stay healthy. And that's another reason they were so... You know, when they found out they were the number one pick, they were just so elated, because they're going to get a big. You don't know about Pekovic down the road. It's almost like, you know, they're sounding like they almost can't trust him to stay healthy in the future. So we'll see what they get out of him. We all kind of like his, you know, he's kind of got that style everybody kind of likes. But, you know, you just don't know about him down the road. So it's great that they're going to wind up with the number one pick, which, you know, if they would have fallen like the Knicks fell, from 2 to 4, you're out of the hunt for those two guys, because they're going to go 1 and 2.
Mitch Lawrence with us tonight at YSR, the Big East Sports Show. After the commercial break, we're going to talk about the Lakers with the number 2 pick. So much more NBA talk coming your way right here at YSR. Welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. Join us online at Twitter at eRadio Sports. Right now, we're going one-on-one with Mitch Lawrence, NBA columnist. So we were talking about the Minnesota Timberwolves. Let's transition right now. Let's talk about the Lakers with the number 2 pick. Of course, they hit the jackpot. What does this ultimately mean for the Lakers?
Oh, it's a gigantic thing. As crushing as it was for the Knicks fan to go from 2 to 4, it was just the opposite for the Laker fan. They saw their team go from 4 to 2. And so they're going to get... whoever, you know, if it's not going to be Okafor, it'll be Towns. If it's not Towns, it's going to be Okafor. And that's a huge building block for them. You know, they're in a situation now where they've got to transition, you know, very soon out of the Kobe Bryant era. He's almost done. You got to rebuild. You got to go with young players. They have Julius Randle, who broke his leg last year, obviously, in the opener. But he's a guy who people like. You're going to get another premium big here. We'll see how great they turn out, one of these guys. So for the rebuilding, that's a huge, huge, it was a big-time night for the Lakers, probably the best night of the season when you look at it, because they lost so much. They had their worst record since they moved out to L.A. over 50 years ago, Alyssa. So, no, this was a banner night for the Lakers. And all Laker fans, they got to be very, very happy that they're going to get a big, big player in this draft.
Okay, a lot of miles on Kobe Bryant. He's going to be, what, returning for his 20th season. What do you think the Lakers will look like when he returns? And, you know, Mitch, how much does he have left in the tank?
Oh, he's got a full tank.
In his
Don't
mind.
Worry about his tank. It's his injury problem.
Okay. Got,
listen, you know, we all love Kobe.
Of course.
The competitor, take no prisoners attitude, demanding on teammates, just ask Dwight Howard about that. You know, Kobe is that. I'm not worried about, you know, if he'll have a full tank. Can the guy stay healthy? And the last couple of years, he hasn't been able to. I don't know what to expect from him. I mean, Achilles stuff and the shoulder. I mean, knee, it's just been awful for him. So I hope he can stay healthy in these last, you know, the last year he plays, whenever his career is going to be over. But I, you know, I'm not going to sit here and guarantee anything about him. But you know, if he's healthy and he's on the court, he's going to give it all he has.
Okay, let's transition. Let's talk about the Knicks. They fall to the 4th pick overall in the 2015 NBA draft. What kind of options do you think they'll have with that pick?
Well, it was a bad night. It was the worst night that they had. They've had a lot of bad nights this season. And first of all, let's reestablish something. Going into the last 3 or 4 games, they had the worst record in the league. Now, the lottery is a lottery. There's a lot of luck involved, but there are things you can control. And in their case, what they could have controlled was they shouldn't have won. They won 2 big road games at Orlando and Atlanta. And by winning those games, Alyssa, they allowed Minnesota to go ahead of them for the worst record. And, of course, when you have the worst record, you have the best chance. And that 25%. Versus the Knicks having less than 20% for the number one pick. You know what? That's what happens. So they not only don't get 1 or 2, they go down to 4. You know, a lot of people are like, well, there's Okafor, there's Crosby, Townsend, there's D'Angelo Russell, the Ohio State guard. And then they start talking about Moutier, who a lot of people don't really know about. It, you know, didn't play a lot. He played in China, but he didn't play here. And, you know, he didn't play against, wasn't easily scouted like a college kid. I think Phil Jackson who, first of all, Phil Jackson wasn't on the scene, and that was poor on his part because, you know what, it doesn't look like he's very engaged at this moment, and that's what Knicks fans, I think, are most mad about with Phil. It's just like he's kind of removed from the situation. He's supposed to be rebuilding this team. He's the face of the franchise. But anyway, now he's got to figure out what to do. I think he's going to try to package and move that pick. Don't ask me how he's going to package it. He doesn't have a lot to offer, but I think Phil's going to look at trying to get maybe a veteran in, move that pick for maybe a veteran, and then use free agency to get some more veteran players and try to rebuild that way. I just don't think of Phil, you know, how many years is Phil going to be here? Is he going to want to bring in a rookie at number four and then try to develop this guy when Phil probably doesn't even know if he wants to do this beyond another year or two? So, look, this was just an awful lottery night for them. Knicks fans, I mean, I feel your pain. They were just traumatized by this whole deal when Steve Mills was sitting up there and Mark Tatum, the deputy commissioner, opens up the envelope and there's the Knicks logo at four. Falling all the way from 2 to 4 was just the worst case scenario for him. And so I think Phil's probably going to look at it as like, well, we probably got to move and trade, and he's going to have to do something creative. And you know what? Who knows if Phil has it in him, because right now all of his moves have been pretty bad.
Well, I have to say, I mean, Knicks fans right now going through this just season of humility. But what would Phil Jackson need to do to help him be viewed and have that perception of him being the Zen master again, Mitch?
Get Marc Gasol in free agency. Get LaMarcus Aldridge. Make a big splash. Go get a big-time star. That's what he'd have to do. I mean, look, if he's going to set the sights on Greg Monroe, no disrespect, but you know what? You or I could offer Greg Monroe overpaying to come to New York, and he'll come. What Phil has to do is he has to go out there and he has to really get some stars. He has to go in and show people in New York again that, you know what, I can do more than just coach. That, you know, he's a first-time executive, so you don't know if he can do it. But, you know, so far he's put down some moves here. The Tyson Chandler trade, giving up on J.R. Smith and Shumpert, not getting much back, helping Cleveland out. I mean, you know, like I like to say, Alyssa, the only good move Phil has made is sign on for $60 million.
And that only benefits himself. Hey, Mitch Lawrence has been with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Mitch, have a great weekend, and we look forward to catching up with you real soon, okay?
Thanks. I enjoyed it, Alyssa.
Thank you. You bet. Much more NBA talk coming your way right here at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. You stay close and join us at Twitter, at eRadio Sports. We will be right back with much, much more. Back with you at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Remember to listen to the show on the go. Just download the Yahoo Sports Radio app by searching Yahoo Sports Radio in your app store. And you can listen on any computer or smart device by going to streamysr.com. That's streamysr.com. And as always, normal data rates apply. So it has been a very big week of hoops. The playoffs, the NBA Final Four, the best of the best are underway. And also, what, Tuesday night, the draft lottery. So we're going to get into that in our next segment. And as always, it's wonderful to have back with us contributor with Slam Magazine, does a great job, and he is the owner and operates the 5-Star Basketball Camp, Lee Klein. We gave you the week off last week, so it's good to have you back in the saddle.
It's good to be back, and it's this is a great stage for basketball. You have four great teams battling it out, trying to figure out how to win the championship. And then the draft is always, you know, hope springs eternal. And the draft allows for that feeling of, next year getting quality player and be able to build from there with it.
Okay, so before we get into all the X's and O's with the draft, as it's going to be coming up at June 25th, your busy season is just around the corner. As I understand, because we've talked about it many times on the show, June 12th is when it's going to get underway for the 5-Star Basketball Camp.
Yeah, so it's we're really excited. It's our 50th season, and we're putting together what we think is going to be an awesome staff and an opportunity for us to continue teaching the game and to passionate player who wants to get their game to the next level, to provide that opportunity, give them 3 or 4 things, make them better players and build them so that they one day could be on this big stage like some of the great 5-star kids like a Steph Curry, a LeBron James, that are doing it right now, competing and trying to win a championship.
You bet. So let's step back to Tuesday night, the results from the NBA lottery, the 2015. What were your takeaways?
Well, I mean, Minnesota, of course, the big winner with the number one. But to me, let me tell you the big winner. It's the two teams that really won by, even though they didn't get the number one, one was the Lakers, who were able to move up to keep their pick, and now in a position where the worst they could do is either Karl Towns or Jahlil Okafor, which is a desperate need since the Andrew Bynum experience didn't work out there. And then the Sixers, who even though they didn't get any consolation picks in that part, they are able, in the three spot, to really get the best guard that they think is the best fit for them and start this rebuild after three consecutive years of top five picks to maybe inch forward into being a competitive team. So those were, you know, those were two major things. The other, you know, the other thing was like the Heat, by staying out of the top 10, by being 10th, they were able to keep their pick instead of losing it. So that was, you know, big for them. So those are kind of the small winners within the lottery that you don't really think about, but end up really paying off big when we talk about getting your roster ready for, you know, for next season.
Okay, the contributor with Slam Magazine, Lee Klein, is joining us tonight on our Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line right here at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Of course, join us at Twitter at eRadio Sports, and you can email the show at Elissa at yahoosportsradio.com. So as we talk about the NBA, the draft lottery, I mean, how fired up do you get about this? Because, you know, it's talking about, you know, these guys, they're unproven, this young, fresh talent. But I get pretty excited about some of the free agents that are coming on board, because these are guys that have proven themselves.
Right. I mean, when we talk about the draft, the reality becomes if you get 8 to 12 guys from this draft that will play some sort of rotational role for their team, that is your typical draft. 8 to 12 guys drafted that actually play in that top 8 for a team and make an influence. So when you compare that to free agency, and there's, of course, LaMarcus Aldridge and some really good players in this free agent class, some, you know, some restricted, some not, you look at the aspect of guys that are, you know, coming in as all-stars and immediate contributors. So the free agent, you know, it's sort of piecing together the puzzle. Of course, they cost a lot more, the free agents, than the draft guys, but absolutely. I think that, you know, July 1, we'll have a winner. We'll have an NBA champion, and everybody else is going to be fighting to get in that position for the following year.
Okay, let me ask you this, Lee. I mean, what team, in your mind, estimation, has the best shot at making the postseason from the lottery teams?
You know, there's a lot that's going to have to be figured out here as far as free agency. How much is lost. I really like the direction that the Detroit Pistons are going in, and I think the Pistons have the 8th pick. They've got some tough decisions coming up, one in particular this year with Greg Monroe, and then next year will be Andre Drummond. But the Pistons are on the rise, and Stan Van Gundy, a leader, one of the best coaches that we have, they are a team that I think is poised to make this next jump up.
What's the biggest challenge that they have to overcome to be able to take that next step?
Well, I think there's you know, getting guys to understand winning. When you haven't been a team that's really won big games and made it to a certain level, if you got a roster that's not that hasn't done that, it's hard to teach that. That's, you know, it's hard to teach how to win games. It's you know, it's odd in that regard, but it's really something that you don't think about, becomes incredibly difficult. So there's key free agent moves that have to be made for them, but you know, Reggie Jackson included, and we talked about Greg Monroe, a lot of key maneuvers. But they've got the right guy at the helm, and it starts with that infrastructure and having the right guy making the decisions. I think means good things for the Pistons as they move forward.
Hey, we're hooping it up with Lee Klein, contributor with Slam Magazine, this weekend at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, as we continue to take you through the fastest 2 hours in radio. So, yeah, we've been talking about some of the top picks that will emerge, but how would you rank this year's draft that's going to be coming up?
Well, I think we've got a really intriguing top dozen players, that I think, that top 12, those are guys that are, that have bright futures. I think this draft is a step back from the great Parker Wiggins class that we just had. And I think that though it's stronger than, let's say, the class that we had 2 years ago or 3 years ago. So I think there's, you got good bigs in this draft, or quality bigs. For instance, a year from now when we're talking, I think we're going to miss the front court talent that's in this draft, because just knowing from the McDonald's All-American and those players, not the same sort of skilled big guys that we have in this draft. So I think that's a key component, and it's interesting how the game's changed and the role of the center. And so you've got some guys that really could be stretch fours or reestablish the pivot as sort of a lost position that we've seen in the NBA.
You know, I know we didn't get a chance to talk last week. I'm not sure if you were in Chicago, but what kind of feedback did you get from that combine, and perhaps what prospect really surprised?
Well, I think, one of the things, this is a growing trend, not just so much in the NBA, but, the NBA combine, getting the top guys to actually go out and compete on the court. Less and less guys want to do that in these combine situations. So, Sam Dekker and some of these guys played really well, but you can't get the top 5 to 10 projected draft guys to get on the court and compete in these combines. They'll do the measurement and that part, but they don't want to go out and compete. So that's a little frustrating. I know that, there have been positives, we talked about Sam Dekker, and I think he showed well, Jerian Grant. Andrew Harrison, surprisingly, played pretty well, where Aaron, his brother, struggled. So there, I think the combine, the measurements are important. Guys like for Sykes and campaign small guards, who when they show up and they're actually measured bigger than what people think, and they're vertical and the physical aspect, and they draft, the GMs can kind of check that off and feel good enough with it. To me, that's probably the biggest part of what the combine provides. Guys pass the physical aspect to take away a hurdle from being drafted. And a lot of guys did a great job in doing that and providing themselves best chance to move forward.
Who's the best point guard in this year's draft?
Well, I'm one who thinks that, we've got in this era kind of the combo guard, right? So D'Angelo Russell is really a two guard that's trying to make the transition for point. And maybe he could do it, like we've seen a Russell Westbrook in that part. I mean, that's what you're talking about, today's prototypical guard. And then you got, Emmanuel Mudiay, who's the same thing. Really not a pure point guard from what we grew up in expecting from a point guard, but a dynamic guard that really is scorer first. And so those two guys, to me, Mudiay having a year pro experience, and just what he can do athletically, he's a little bit more ready. And I would put Mudiay ahead of D'Angelo Russell, but Russell is equally incredibly talented, and one that people really love how he passes the ball and see potential for him to play the point guard on this NBA level.
Okay, circle your calendar for June 25th, the 2015 NBA Draft. It will be here before you know it. Of course, we've been visiting with Lee Klein, the contributor with Slam Magazine. Always does a great job joining us at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. We'll talk again soon. Thanks, Lee.
My pleasure.
Much more NBA talk coming your way right here at Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com. Welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm Elissa Walker-Campbell. Remember, as always, to listen to the show on the go. You just download the Yahoo Sports Radio app by searching Yahoo Sports Radio in your app store, and you can listen on any computer or smart device by going to streamysr.com. That's streamysr.com, and normal data rates apply. Okay, so the Mayweather-the Pacquiao fight, that is long in the rearview mirror. It's time now. We're going to shift gears, and we are going to take time for a book review. Author John Jonathan Gottschall has released his new book. It is titled The Professor in the Cage, Why Men Fight and Why We Like to Watch. It's good to have you with us tonight at YSR. Thank you, Jonathan.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
All right, so let's open up with sharing your unlikely journey from the college classroom to the fighting cage and how this book even came about. I mean, why in the world would an English professor decide to become an MMA fighter at middle age? My question to you is, Jonathan, were you having a midlife crisis?
I think I was having a bit of a midlife crisis. I was, you know, 39 years old at the time, I believe.
Oh, my gosh.
Working as an English instructor at a small liberal arts college.
Sure.
And one day I'm at my office hours, and I happen to glance out the front window, and this new business had opened up across the street. It was one of these cage fighting gyms. And I was just ambushed by this emotion I didn't expect, and the emotion was envy. You know, I envied those young guys across the street. I could see them dancing and rolling and hitting and tackling. And it seemed like they were so alive in their cage while I'm kind of rotting away in my office cubicle. And so I had this thought, and it was sort of a joke at my own expense. I was like, wouldn't it be funny if I walked across the street and joined them? Me, you know, because I'm almost 40, not in great shape, and I've literally never been in a fight before. And then my next thought was, hey, maybe there's a book in that, a sort of nonfiction version of Fight Club. I go across the street, I try to learn how to fight, but along the way I'd also be asking these big questions about violence and the role that sports play in human life and all kinds of other things.
Hey, Jonathan Gottschall is with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. We are shining the spotlight on his new book, The Professor in the Cage, Why Men Fight and Why We Like to Watch. And before we break down the book, I got to ask you this. I mean, I'm looking at your bio. You're a happily married guy. You got two kids, two daughters. What in the world was your wife's reaction when you told her that you had the desire to become an MMA fighter at middle age?
Oh, well, first, you know, she had to figure out whether I was joking or not. And then I sort of convinced her, I told her my whole dumb plan for becoming a cage fighter. And this is a verbatim quote. She says, you'll be killed. You have no skills.
Oh.
And that sort of hurt my feelings. But it was true. I don't have any skills.
It was probably a motivator, though, too, huh?
But then she became incredibly comfortable with it to the point where it was almost disturbing. You know, I'd come home from the gym, and I'd be sort of beat up, and I'd be like, oh, man, I can't even see straight. I got hit so hard today. And she'd be like, did you unload the dishwasher? You know, she had very little sympathy for me at the end. And I was thinking, my God, woman, don't you love me at all? she became alarmingly comfortable with it, is what I'm saying.
Well, what about the response and feedback from the professors and your colleagues? I mean, were they supportive of this? We were talking about in the open in your English professor?
Yeah, so English professors don't generally approve of blood sport, you know? and always part of the joke, that joke at my own expense, when I was looking out across at the gym from my English department, always part of the joke was that my colleagues would be able to literally look up from the poems that they were reading at their desk, glance out the window, and see me over there in the cage. I thought they'd be scandalized and offended, but they weren't. For the most part, they were way more tolerant and open-minded about it than I thought they would be. They were pretty cool about it.
So, Jonathan, did you always have the desire to fight, to be in a cage fight? Because let's be honest for the listeners across the country tonight. I mean, MMA fighting, it requires intense strength. I mean, it is a full contact sport. I mean, you're getting punched, choked, kicked into submission. I mean, why would you want to be a part of that and subject yourself to such extreme pain?
Two reasons. One, first off, I describe the sport as one-on-one tackle football with the addition of punching, kicking, kneeing, elbowing, and strangling. You know, so it's a really fierce and violent sport. Why did I want to do it? I'm not really sure I did want to do it. You know, part of me didn't want to do it. I was scared. I was full of anxiety the whole time. I did it for a couple reasons. One, I wanted to see if it was possible for a man like me, a guy who isn't naturally brave, to go into that sort of situation and practice being brave, you know, night after night, until it sort of became habitual. So I'd never done a brave thing, and I wanted to see if I could. On the other hand, I also had a very strong scholarly and intellectual reason for going over there. I was interested in questions about violence.
Mm-hmm.
I was interested in this big question about why men fight, not just in a cage, not just in sport contexts, but why men are capable and are responsible for the lion's share of violence all around the world. And MMA gave me a good way to bridge into those bigger questions about violence.
Okay, so why men fight? That was one of your questions. What did you learn?
Well, you know, a lot of times it's kind of looks illogical. Men's violence looks illogical. for the most part, they're not fighting over, and I'm talking about mano a mano violence, not warfare. For the most part, they're not fighting over tangible things like money or the last hamburger when everybody's starving. For the most part, they're fighting over intangible things. They're fighting over something you can't see and you can't smell and you can't touch. They're fighting basically over honor. They're fighting over respect. This goes way, way back to duelists, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And when men get in fights today, it is most likely to be over matters of respect. Someone will be offended. Someone will feel insulted. There'll be bluster and threats back and forth. The men will close the distance. If no one backs down, a fight will break out.
Jonathan Gottschall is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I want to encourage you to go out and get a copy of his book. It is titled The Professor in the Cage, Why Men Fight and Why We Like to Watch. And that's a question for me. I mean, it is surprising to me. I'm just saying this personally. The popularity, I mean, the audience. I mean, how can the intensity of the fight, the violence, how can that be pleasurable to one?
I think that's a great question. I mean, that's one of the things that really drew me to this, because it was a very personal question to me. I've been watching fights on TV, I don't know, maybe for 20 years as a pretty avid fight fan. And I've been thinking to myself, hey, I'm a civilized, decent, peace-loving woman.
Right, yeah.
What's wrong with me? I appear not to be a sociopath, so why am I watching this stuff? And why do we all watch this stuff, you know? I mean, even those of us who wouldn't be caught dead at a cage fight, we're still consuming a huge amount of violent entertainment, whether in sports or our movies, films, video games, whatever. But I eventually came around to the point of view that it's not largely barbarism and bloodlust that draws us to this. I think it's kind of almost close to the opposite. If we just wanted barbarism or bloodlust, we could download ISIS torture murder videos and watch those all day long. But most of us don't want to see that, but we still find it hard not to watch a big fight. I think it's just because it's an incredibly intense drama. It's an incredibly intense showdown, climactic. It's reality TV. All the pain is real. All the elation is real. And counterintuitively, all the savagery in a fight brings out not only maybe the worst angels of human nature, but the best angels too. It sets up these conditions of adversity that force the fighters to be heroic, to be courageous, to show perseverance and fortitude and character. So we're drawn to a fight maybe partly by the worst angels of human nature, but I think we go there to admire the best parts of human nature too.
Hey, Jonathan Gottschall has been with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Again, the title of his book is The Professor in the Cage, Why Men Fight and Why We Like to Watch. Congratulations on the book. And I can only say, I'm sure your wife loved the benefits of this type of training. I mean, you endured 2 years of intense training and you probably look pretty shiny. So,
I did. For like 15 minutes, I actually had abs. They're long gone now.
Very good. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Jonathan.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. You get ready. We're going to be talking some NBA talk, the Western and the Eastern Conference Finals. Stay close.